Have you heard about the new MagnaGrip Pro Nozzle? The MagnaGrip Pro Nozzle is the easiest, most advanced nozzle ever, protecting you from the dangers of diesel exhaust fumes. With its patented flex magnet technology, the Pro Nozzle easily attaches with one hand from a standing position, can snap on from any angle, and fits flush to the apparatus, saving a ton of space. A MagnaGrip is the only exhaust removal system that offers a true 100% seal. For free grant assistance and to learn more, go to MagnaGrip.com.
This fire engineering podcast is made possible by Tincata Protective Fabrics. The global leader in flame-resistant fabrics, Tincata Protective Fabrics enables millions of people worldwide to be great at what they do. Generations of industry professionals serving in the fire service, industrial, and military industries rely on Tincata fabrics for safety, comfort, and confidence. From the harshest working conditions to the welcoming site of home, Tincata recognizes the people they're protecting are unique individuals whose lives extend beyond work. Supporting a world of evolving needs, Tincata's innovations lead the way in user-centric design, technology, and sustainability around the globe. To learn more, please visit TincataFabrics.com.
Welcome, everybody, to the Command Show. I'm Anthony Castros, and I'm coming to you live with some friends here from FDIC 2022 right here in Indianapolis. It's been a great week so far. We're just over the halfway point, and I think a lot of us talking today and yesterday are kind of realizing that, you know, we have it's like a marathon. We're not done yet. We got a long way to go. A lot of amazing training, a lot of wonderful instructors. We just had the second morning opening ceremony. It was phenomenal. My brother, Frank Fiscuso, was a keynoter, as was Doug Mitchell. They did a phenomenal job. So we're excited to come to you live from the Flow Shore from the show.
Caffeine.
Yeah. I just had a lot of meat, and so I might pass out, fall asleep.
Start sweating. We know what happened.
If I get the meat sweats, I'll just pass out to the left, and Chief Mitchell Good. Will take over. So without further ado, we have some friends of ours from Waco, Texas, and from Sacramento Metro Fire, where I used to work. So without further ado, gentlemen, go ahead and introduce yourselves.
Thanks, Anton. So hi, everybody. My name is Adam Mitchell. I am the Deputy Chief of Operations for Metro Fire.
I'm Joe Furica. I'm the Special Operations Battalion Chief for Metro Fire.
Eric Reiser, I'm a suppression lieutenant with Waco Fire Department.
Patrick Fasilka, Waco Fire, Deputy Chief of Operations.
And I'm Robbie Bergerson. I'm the Executive Deputy Chief of the Waco Fire Department.
And so everybody knows, how big is Waco? How many stations?
So Waco's 13 fire stations, population about 140,000.
And you guys burn?
Occasionally.
Yeah. Occasionally. Yeah, you're being modest. And Metro Fire, for those who don't know, what's the official station count now? 39, 40?
It's 40, depending on the day of the week. But yeah.
So we just got done having lunch, and we're, as everybody does at this show, we're all solving the world's problems, of course. And we're talking about common challenges that we're having across the fire service, which all come here, and everyone starts kibitzing and talking, and a lot of the really good networking at lunchtime happens. And so we were just talking about challenges of leadership, challenges of the next generation, coming out of the pandemic. What are the challenges moving forward? Can we get the momentum back that we had before? Are we going to settle for the old normal? Or are we going to redefine a new normal? Those kinds of things. So with that, we'll talk about command. We'll talk about officer development. There's really no topic that's off the table, fellas. So we'll talk about whatever you want. Now, Chief Bergerson, I'm fortunate to work with him also as one of our instructors. We do the Calm the Chaos training around the country, and he's one of our instructors in that. Chief Mitchell was an instructor of ours before he got promoted up the chain, got too busy, but he was also an instructor of ours. And tell us a little bit about that fire you had, about a month ago. I think you had a triple victim rescue on in a garden apartment. What were some of the like highlights of that and challenges that you overcame?
I think it was just a perfect set of circumstances, really, if you can have a perfect set of circumstances surrounding an apartment fire. But we initially got the call, it was about 9 in the morning, I think, multiple calls on an apartment fire, and our 911 dispatchers were still on the phone with people trapped above the fire. So we knew we had people trapped in
I think apartment D. Mm-hmm. It's a four unit, or actually eight unit, but four on one side, four on the other. And so we knew we had two people trapped, and I was right behind the, fortunate enough to be right behind the first two engine company, and established command quickly. And they began to initiate fire attack on the first floor, and which allowed me to divert almost every other resource coming in to rescue initially as a rescue group.
Nice.
Was established, and they actually located two people in the apartment that was confirmed where they were trapped, and then an additional person in an adjacent apartment that we didn't know about.
So that notion from Firefighter Rescue Survey that if you have one victim trapped, you're liable to have three on average was held to be spot on right there. Yeah. Yeah, excellent. So what was your overall, if I remember right, you had a fire attack group, rescue group, and did medical. You have medical?
And medical.
And you were obviously there?
Yes.
What company were you on that day?
And my role is deputy chief.
Oh, so you came in as a sole survivor.
Yes.
Coming in there as a deputy chief. Yes. So you guys are probably kibitzing a lot this week. So what did he assign you?
Nothing. I'm just kind of the
all-time defender, safety officer, orbit defender, senior advisor,
situation awareness.
Cat herder. Yeah.
Locating victims, getting them to medical, because there was one that was wandering around. So.
Oh yeah, heard the cats.
Yes.
And so the nice thing is you had made some of your company officers, division, and group supervisors, which alleviated the need for the chief to do it, and he came in a little bit later anyway.
Right, and we were fortunate. I think the 2nd New Battalion chief became the medical group.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
Quickly transitioned from a rescue situation to having multiple patients.
Right.
So I wanted to get a handle on that, have effective supervision, and figure out even really if the people they brought out were the people that we thought were trapped.
I remember you saying that too, yeah.
And just trying to clear some of that up. So I wanted to get strong supervision on that. So we made a battalion chief the medical group.
Beautiful. Nice. Yeah, it went great. Yeah. If those of you who haven't seen it, I'm pretty sure it's on my Facebook page, trainedfirefighters.com Facebook page. It's a great video of an excellent job by Chief Ferguson.
So you had video of the actual like game day tape of what was going on?
Dash cam. Camera dash.
Cool.
A little bit. Yeah. So as operations chiefs, what are some of the big challenges you two are seeing at that level right now? I think we all know of some of the common stuff, COVID and everything, but what are some unique challenges to Waco right now?
Get back in the boat of hands-on training, getting past the pandemic, COVID shut down, and getting moving again.
Yeah. Yeah. Has there been a lot of promotions in the past 2 years?
Actually, yes.
And so these folks
have been all levels from fat chief to engineer.
Yeah. And so in that time of a lot of new officers and new members, they haven't had a lot of training.
They missed out on a lot of training. They missed out on just a lot of hands-on.
Yeah.
I think what normal, so similar for us. We have currently no promotional list for battalion chief, captain, or engineer. Wow. And there's been tests in that time.
Wow.
So we're going into, the people, the folks that got promoted during that time, know nothing different than that. Man. And so, you look at organizationally as a whole, what are some of the things we need to focus on? And like Patrick's saying, is we got to get back to what is that? How do we get back out there and get the folks out of the firehouses that we told them, hey, shut your doors, put on the don't stuff. Stay in your rooms, for that long. But
a little thing like company inspection.
All by the wayside.
Yes. Yeah. I mean,
stuff. Right.
The world stuff.
We had a class yesterday, leadership and succession planning for the next generation, and that I love doing that class because every year it's packed, and it's not because of me, it's because it's such a major topic for fire departments around the country. Everyone's has the same challenge of being behind the curve on developing new leaders they currently have. Are they actually leading? And with the attrition rate around the country, I'm sure COVID obviously accelerated that. We have a greater need than ever. And so there's like almost a vacuum of leadership. And Chief Eureka, you have been the special ops chief now for about a year and a half.
Yep. It's been right at 18 months.
And before that, you were line battalion chief.
Yep. Spent 17 months on the line.
In our beloved battalion 7th, I recall.
Yes. Back to the homeland for me, the one of my, the agency where I started.
Right. So what's been the biggest change for you over the past 2 years in the promotion and everything?
So I would say the biggest change has been my time in special operations and taking on an administrative role and having the opportunity to see the business side of the fire department that people that work in the firehouse would never see.
Yeah.
And having the ability to understand that business side of the fire department and then going back out into the firehouses and being able to talk about that, knowing that what I'm giving them is factual information. When you hear the questions in regards to, well, oh, I don't understand. We've got the biggest budget we've ever had. How come we don't have money for this? And being able to explain to people why that money is there, but it can't be spent.
Right.
And being able to have an educated conversation with the folks.
I think that's the key, Chief, is an educated conversation. Because if you look at the six of us, I mean, well, I've got some gray hair. Some of us don't have much hair. Yeah. I mean, it's the same, but it smells.
High speed, low drag.
Yeah. This table, for those of you at home watching from your stations, this table smells a lot like Bengay and urine right now because we're all very old, but we want to bring you into our world. And to your point, they want to know why.
100%.
And we were told what? Don't ask why. Just do what you're told.
Exactly.
And that's a big change for us to explain why to the people coming up behind us, because we are so task focused. We have so much work to do. We don't take the time out to give them the why, which is the leadership piece, right? So I know you're dealing with a whole entire new staff virtually at your level, peer-wise and below your level. So how's that going?
It's, you know, there's challenges and opportunities, right? So I think you mentioned about the change in, you know, just come to work and do your job. And if the captain says and the whoever says you do it. I think the discussion about the why actually helps us with succession planning.
Yeah.
So if you look at it from a different aspect of quit asking me why I told you to do it, it's, well, if I explain why, then you'll have that leg up the next time something happens. Or when you look to move up, you have some of those opportunities to address. Hey, I've heard about that before.
Right.
You know, you're actually, in some way, it's a positive thing. So, absolutely. And so one of the things, and we talk about is, you know, we can linger as a, you know, this is kind of our coffee table. We can sit here and talk about all the bad stuff that's happened. And I think a lot of times we need to flip it on its head and say, hey, there's a lot going right. What are the opportunities here? How do we move forward? And what's, you know, the new normal of post-pandemic? And if we never talk about another one again, I'm totally happy with it.
Yeah.
But new people coming in, that's what they know. Let's move forward now. And what are the actual challenges for our organization to grow, to do the succession planning, to grow leadership and some of those things? And that's exciting.
Yeah.
And that's a great opportunity. It's sitting right there. How do we do it?
It is. And I think that I like what you said, you know, what's going right. And I think that it's firefighter nature. It's human nature to focus on what went wrong. That's why we have people slowing down and rubbernecking at vehicle accidents. It's just, you know, it's just in our nature as human beings. It's even more in our nature as firefighters around a coffee table. And so who is it incumbent upon to change the conversation at that moment in the firehouse?
It really starts at multiple levels. I mean, really the company officer should be the one who starts that conversation. And then the battalion chiefs, if they're aware of it, might have to have that conversation with their captains and go, hey, you know, if all we do is sit around the firehouse kitchen table and talk about the negative, it's a cancer and it just spreads and it really drags the organization down, pulls the morale down, and it's not good for anybody.
Yeah. And you start to see little things like not checking the rig until 8:15. If shift changes at 8, let's say rigs don't get checked till 8:15, 8:30 pretty soon. I mean, I've seen them checked as late as 10:30. Because of those conversations, like you said, they snowball into this negative environment. I remember many, many years ago when I was a training captain, I was doing a RIC drill, and it was a department-wide RIC drill, so companies were coming through, and I could really get a finger of the pulse, like you said, on the organization. I remember one crew comes in, and I was giving them the orientation of the drill, and one of them pops up, well, you know, if the chief did his job, we would drill. I just went... I go, really? I go, so you're going to cut off your nose to spite your face. You're going to show the chief by not doing a drill that could save you or your crew. Do you really? You're the one who's going to die in the fire at midnight, not him. And so I think it's easy for firefighters to find blame instead of finding solutions. Right?
That's a good point.
Yeah. So what do you think?
Well, some of those things, I mean, you can kind of think of like a fundamental change in perception, and the pandemic just kind of accelerated it, of the difference between hammering on negatives versus encouraging positives.
Right.
You know, you can take that to new officers, you can take it to new firefighters, whatever. I mean, that's, you can take it to parent. You know, it's a skill to go with that, of the old way of, well, you're just going to do it that way. Not because we always did it, but because I told you that's just the way it's going to be.
Right.
And if you can throw in a little of, like you said, the why, just add that little explanation and then throw a few positive strokes in with it. It seems to have, generationally, that seems to be the easier way to get people encouraged to do things for you rather than do things despite you.
Right. Yeah. Well said. Well said. You know, I know in a lot of leadership curricula now, obviously, we're applying more and more to the military. And so you talk about, you hear a lot more about leadership, leader's intent and task, purpose, end state. Well, you know, the military, if anybody was taught in the old days, do what I tell you, it's the military.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But even they're following the task, purpose, end state, which is here's what we're doing. Here's why we're doing it. Here's what success looks like. And modern firefighters, new firefighters, recruits, they want that. Certainly new officers need that to be successful. You know, the why. Because if we give them the task, purpose, end state, then we can step back and not micromanage them, but we've given them clear direction. The key though, and this is what I've found, is I've seen people overuse leader's intent though. They'll give leader's intent to somebody who isn't skilled or capable of meeting the intent. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll say, oh, I just need to do this. And they're looking at them, you know, cross-eyed because they haven't had the training to do this, whatever it is, whether it's as a first in officer or resolve conflict, you know, or have a difficult conversation with the crew. You know, or just change the subject, you know? And so what do you think we need to do to bridge that gap? Instead of just, here's my intent, what do we need to do to actually equip them to affect the change and lead in the moment, not just kind of be the buddy?
It's training. I mean, you got to do the training. You got to tell, when we talk about some of the leadership series and task, purpose, end state and where it came from, having people understand what that is and why it's out there and how do we utilize that theory on getting, you know, to a place. We got to train our people to understand it. You know, the whole starting with why. It's some people don't even understand what that means. And so I think we need to do a better job of, you know, we talk about fires and pulling hoses and throwing ladders and those kinds of things. We've had a few meetings internally to our department where people were talking about, what about this other stuff that I'm not comfortable with? Let's talk about it. Let's lay the foundation. You know, we talk about personnel issues or how do we do some of these other things with, you know, we talked earlier at lunch about discipline. And is that a negative?
Right.
You know, why is it negative? Well, this is how I experience it, but this is what it's actually intended to be. And the end state is we're looking for a behavior change or whatever. And it's a positive thing. So I think, one is having these discussions, but the training back home about, you know, what are we actually doing organizationally to adjust to explaining the task. And internally for us, we've influenced or put that out there as part of our metrics of when you're able to take a captain's test. Mm-hmm. L280 is a requirement, right? Mm-hmm. There's some leadership training there, followership leadership, L380 for battalion chiefs, but that's not enough. No. I mean, we got to be doing it every day in the fire stations. Yeah. Yeah.
It's
so.
Like everything, just like incident command skills, it's perishable.
It's perishable.
Yeah.
Everything is.
Because I think, would you guys agree that, you know, as a leader, you're going to have to overcome your own personality sometimes to be effective?
Oh, absolutely.
Right? Yeah, 100%. You know, I mean, you would never accept this statement about a paramedic. Well, you know, he's really good, but he sucks on trauma calls. I was like, what? That's not a paramedic then, right? You know, or you know, she's fantastic on trauma, but she doesn't do drug dosages very well. We just hope for the best. It's like, okay, that it's laughable, literally.
Yeah.
Yet we accept from our bosses, from our leaders at all levels, well, he or she is really good on the fire ground, but they're impatient, critical, and don't deal with conflict. It's like, whoa. They're not, then therefore they're not a leader. It's a package deal.
It's kind of unique to our profession, but we wear so many hats sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's hard to be good at everything.
You have to be a decathlete, you know, kind of.
And especially coming from like operations into staff, there's a big adjustment.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And the learning curves. In the learning curve.
Steep.
And even going back to the why of things, that can be a snowballing effect. Well, that person is... they're pretty good at the job, or they're pretty good doing these things, but those other things they're not that great at. And be where the conversation stops.
Exactly.
It never goes on to, so what are we going to do to improve that that one skill
that's
that
it.
We don't like that he does?
That's
or
it.
You just let it foster and
or just ignore it and hope it goes away.
And it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
Right.
Exactly. And that to me is that's the tactical gap. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about the tactical gap on the emergency scene, the fire ground. But because the tactile gap's everywhere, you know, I've got a big tactile gap between these two ears right here, okay, and so I had to rely on my company officers, you know, to bridge that gap. What do you see from the back? What do you suggest we do? You know, is there a tactical opportunity with a firewall? Do we need to call a second alarm? You know, and we're a team. And one of the hard parts about going into staff is you probably I know we all did as new battalion chiefs. You're alone all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're one of those fire departments that has drivers for your chiefs. And if you do, you suck. But the vast majority of us in the country don't have drivers.
Right.
And so you're thrust from this team environment, the academy, all your crews you've ever worked with. Even if you're on an ambulance, you got one other person. Now you're thrust into this abyss called the BC buggy. And you instantly have to learn through trial and error. And you often, you think that they oftentimes learn bad habits just for, out of sheer survival.
Mm-hmm. Well, then you're talking about the bad habits like we talked about at lunch today. One of the things that the fire service seems notorious for is holding on to the past and a lot of stuff that's not necessarily good. We see it today just with some of our radio traffic, for example, since I also deal with our CAD and dispatch stuff where I see radio terminology that's used today that has been obsolete for 25 years. And most of the people that are using it weren't even around when it was used. They don't even know why they're using it, but they heard it from somebody else and it just carries on. And I mean, that can be, that's through all phases of the fire service, unfortunately. And we need to learn to get rid of that baggage and be able to move forward.
It's hard to move forward when you're dragging a ball and chain
back. Absolutely.
Ooh.
Absolutely.
Oh, did you learn that, that new executive thing you guys are doing?
Not.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, speaking of old habits and traditions, I tell a story about Waco. I don't say who it is. I don't say it's Waco, and I may embellish a little.
No.
What? But
I don't know one thing's
a fact. This is a factual, but then there's another one that's not so factual. Yeah. But the first one is very factual. And when I came to do Calm the Chaos, I came to Waco in 16, I think it was, where we met and fell in love. And it was apparent to me that like every third person wasn't turning out. I was like, and then they also happen to have a rag in their back pocket. It's like, so you know where I'm going with this. So I find out, the engineers don't turn out. They just don't. And not just the first and then engineer, none of them. And so at the time, how many companies were on a first alarm? So five engineers weren't turning out. They all stood in the front with a rag in their back pocket and stood on the front lawn. And they're nodding, yes, I'm not making this up. And I remember hearing this going, why? And it was no good reason. It was just this way we've always done it. I go, what's the rag for? Well, in case we need to wipe up something. I go, so I got five wipers. So I got a task.
You got some clean windows.
Wipers. Cool. And I was dumbfounded. And the funny part was at the time you had a new, relatively new fire chief. And he was in the back going, because he hadn't heard this before. But what were they all saying? We need more crews on the fire. We need more bodies. We need more companies. I'm like, you guys have five right now. And it was because we've always done it that way. Now, here's the fictional story I tell. But I don't tell them it's Waco.
Now, Jim.
But now you all know.
Cat's out of the bag.
Maybe fictional was so one of the other habits was at night, you guys would rinse off your wheels on the rigs. Remember that? Okay. Yeah, just rinse off the wasn't raining muddy. Just we always rinse off the wheels.
4 o'clock. And
4 o'clock. 4 o'clock wheel rinsing
and
time.
We're gonna pull back the why. That's where the story's gonna.
That's where the story's gonna go. And the best we could get was that's how it was done when the horses were drawn.
And it
swelled up the wood so that the spokes so the rims would be tight.
No way.
And they still did it.
No way.
And rust the horse poop off. Still did it. This was 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, I'm sure there's some wows for everybody, but
well, this was 16 when I was there.
Yeah.
Oh,
sorry.
My company's ever done that. So why did we stop doing it? Because somebody finally went, "Why would you do that?"
Well,
it was to watch the horse crap.
I'm not doing that.
Well, sometimes you need that outside perspective too, because you're blind to it when it's happening
when you're in
your
it,
organization.
You yeah.
The Christmas ham story. Yes.
Boy, we cut both ends off the ham. Is that yeah? Yeah. Yeah.
We're a fully modernized fire department now.
Way to pull it back, so Robbie.
Happy to report.
Yeah. Reel that back in.
Yeah.
And the mayor was part of fuck up.
No, but
are the engineers still throwing hay at the front of the engine in the morning?
Yeah, they fill the oat bags.
They fill the oat bag off the cue siren in the morning.
It absorbs the oil since they don't walk around with rags in their pockets anymore.
Oh my God. Yeah, leave it to a table of fire. Yeah, there's a broom now.
So one of my favorite topics of conversation slash debate is with my friend Anthony Avillo. In this very room, we talked about it a year ago, which is command in the buggy, command on the front lawn or the sidewalk. And, you know, we go back and forth, and now he's come up with safe space command because, you know, I'm back in my BC buggy. So it's great. I submit the only reason that knucklehead does that is because, and everybody else that does it, is because where did they do it when they had a trumpet? Literally in the 1800s, before there was portable radios, they had a trumpet. Well, you can't trumpet from a block away. You have to be in the front. So with Vinny, do this, Bobby, do that, Joey, do this. Now they just replaced it with a radio. I guarantee you that's the only reason why it's happened. It's because it's always been.
Has he had defense to that? I mean,
no.
He just goes
and has a beer.
That's effective.
Or he tells me how Elvis isn't as good as the Beatles. And then we have that debate. So, you know.
Yeah. So, oh, man. You're going
to I know
divide and conquer here.
So you were talking about the learning curve when you go into an admin role. Okay. Imagine now. Every company officer, every battalion chief, or the ones that are new, all have that feeling.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and it's the thing that sucks about us is that we don't ask for help. Mm-hmm. You can have a senior engineer. You can have a senior firefighter right backwards, Jake, behind you, which that's not even there anymore in a lot of cases. But maybe call that more senior captain. Call your BC. You know, hey, I got this thing going on with one of my guys. Can you help me out? And we just don't ask for help. And it sucks. It's like not calling it occupational mayday. It's like, you know, I got this issue. I'm not trapped in a building, but I'm kind of trapped in a situation I don't know how to get out of. Call some help.
I'll say I was very fortunate. My two predecessors that were in the special operations role, I have easy access to in the office. Perfect. And they did a very good job of setting me up for success.
Nice.
So I was very appreciative of that. There was a good information pass on.
Yeah.
And when I run into something that I'm not sure how we need to address it, I go right to them and use those guys as a resource because they're there. And I mean, you should do that regardless. And I don't care what rank it is. You can always find somebody that can point you in the right direction.
Exactly.
You just have to be willing to ask.
Be will humble yourself.
Yep.
And be willing to ask. And that was interesting. I saw that time and time again, as I got more and more senior in my position as BC, I see more and more new BCs coming up and they wouldn't ask for help. And I can hear in his voice on this call, he's drowning right now. I could see what's going on or whatever, but we need to get to a.
Do you think that's because there's not as many mentors available?
I think that's part of it. Yeah. I think that's a big part of it. I think a mentor shouldn't be your boss. Your boss should be a mentor, but you should have another mentor that's at or below, not below, but at your level.
At a peer level.
So you don't feel a friend, yeah.
One thing you're talking about there is you're talking about, you know, you would hear somebody struggling with a call, but they wouldn't reach out for help. That's the one thing I will say organizationally that I think we're very strong at right now is our command teams on our respective shifts are really good about taking care of each other like that. You know, we have two battalion chiefs that go to every fire. And you might get additional battalion chiefs that just show up and will assist. And we don't see guys flailing at that level right now, at least because that leadership team concept is very solid.
That's good. That's refreshing to hear. Cause it's you see it pretty much everywhere. You know, I think we all, and the BC job is, I think, the biggest step. You know, you're now part of management. You're wearing a gold badge. You're by yourself. It's really a new planet for a lot of us because we don't know. What the heck does he do all day? What does she do all day? We don't know what the BC does. You know, it's not like when you're with your company officer, you see what they're doing all the time. You know, so
definitely separation.
What would you say is your average years in the seat of your BCs right now? There's 15 of them on the floor.
Ooh, average.
Is it even years?
No, it is. And I have to look at the numbers, but I will tell you that, I mean, and Joe can speak to this too, is the like we talked about the promotional lists. I think we had, what was it? 8 on the last list or 6 on the last list. And we went through it. Right. And that's true of the last few lists.
Yes.
So, you know, senior battalion chief, you know, they've been in there for a little while, but we do have
a big gap between.
Yeah, there is.
Yes.
And so go ahead.
Well, I think the most senior battalion chief we have right now is at about 8 or 9 years in the rank. And the majority of us from what number four down are the number four guy is just a hair over 3 years, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then we're below that. The nice thing is a big chunk of that group are senior members in the organization, though. It's not necessarily. So
they've been in the job a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got some, they got some experience there. Yeah. So, and so I know what some of the things that bothers me is we talk a lot about how young everybody is. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's not bad. It just is, I guess. And that's, so I worry it sometimes when we say, oh, they're young, they're inexperienced. Yeah. And so it goes back to what I think we're talking about at the base of this is it's reality. We can complain about it or we can do something about it. And right. Doing something about it is organizationally, we're going to do a better job of providing that training or providing that foundation right. Of here is what right looks like. We'll tell you how to do it right. When you don't know, reach out and call. We've talked about that on, like you said, the BCs are out moving around, you know, company officers are talking. We've started a mentor program. We're doing, you know, academies before remote promotional exams. Mm-hmm. What's the next thing we do? Laying out a program over a certain number of months, where as you go through it, you'll get all of those basic building blocks to build from. Is it perfect? No,
but
it's never going to be perfect, but it's something
from when I was doing it.
Right. And it's something. Yes. And so I think when we talk about some of those things, it's a negative connotation at times. It's reality. It's not bad. We have great people. We got motivated folks that want to learn.
Yeah.
It's our job as those folks that have been around a while. They go, okay, we're going to break the mold. Like, what is the mold? We're going to break the mold. This isn't how we've always done it, because it's just, you know, the horses or whatever the reason is. Cause some predecessor agency did it. We had 16 predecessor agencies that come together over time, you know, get rid of that. Let's just do a better job moving forward. And that's back to laying the foundation, what's right look like, providing leadership training, providing command and control training, having those conversations, getting companies back out in the fields. As the captains are the station training officers, the battalion chiefs are the battalion training officers, the shift commanders are the shift training officers. We have a training division, but you know how it is. I mean, nobody's well staffed in training, right? You got a number of people. Right. So,
do we have a question
from Facebook from our buddy Brian Rush?
Hey, what's up, baby?
And I think this might be going back to a little bit earlier, where it says the reverse can be true of a senior chief or officer reaching out to the younger next generation for opportunities to improve our connections to our future.
Yeah, good there point.
Agreed 100%.
Yeah, so it's a two-way communication. That's a great point. And so
there he goes, being smart again, that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's true. Brunicini had what he called his interpreter, and he would always pick one. This the way I understood what he told me was he had somebody out of each recruit class assigned to his office to be the interpreter to just kind of help him stay up fresh on the lingo and the mindset of people coming up.
Keeps you in touch, right?
It keeps you in touch.
And that's being accessible to do that. What he's talking about is important for us to remember too.
We talked about it at lunch, just being present.
Yep.
It can't be overstated how important that is.
So important.
Yep. Well, and not just present, but present and involved.
Right. Right.
Because you see folks that they show up, but they're not involved, they're not engaged, and so then they're not helping.
Right.
Yeah, they're not adding value to the situation.
Correct.
I remember I had a crew. This is a good example of all this coming together. I remember I was working one day, and one of the other BCs called me and said, "Hey, did you know that Engine 108 just had a 2-year-old drowning?" And I said, "Oh God, no! Thanks for letting me know. I go where they transport." So they told me. They go to the hospital, their engine's parked there, the ambulance is parked there. This happened to be an AMR medic, it wasn't one of ours. And I didn't go running in to solve everybody's problems because I wanted the captain to, it's the captain's deal. I'm here as a resource. So I just stood outside waiting for them. And I was standing parked probably 100 feet plus from the back of the hospital ER. And one at a time, they would come out. And you know, I had to kind of resist the urge to run up there and hug them. I wanted them to work it out themselves and just be here if and when they need me. Mm-hmm. So they all kind of made eye contact, and I just went just like this. And then the captain came out, and you could tell he was kind of doing a little hot wash with everybody, and he was leading. And I was so proud of him. And so after that, he started to approach me. So then I started to approach, and I said, "What do you need from me?" And he goes, you know, the AMR crew really wants to come back to the station and kind of do more of a debrief with us. Can you get them off, out of service?" I go, "Absolutely, consider it done." I go, what else? He goes, well, we probably need to do some kind of feedback. I go, okay. I go, you can facilitate it informally. I can facilitate it informally, or we can call in, you know, some more, you know, the chaplain or peer support or CISM or whatever. I go, what do you think we should do? He goes, I think I can handle it. I go, great. I said, if you're good with it, I'll come over and observe. And if you need me, I'm here as a resource or to call, but I won't interject anything. I'll just be there if you need me. He goes, that'd be perfect. I go, then that's down to what does everybody want from Starbucks? So I just went, got everybody's Starbucks order. They went over, I came over. I just sat in the corner. It was their incident. I didn't want to overstep my bounds and solve their problem. And he did, and it was an opportunity for him to grow. He stepped up and led and did a phenomenal job.
I think that's like having emotional intelligence and just showing empathy for the situation.
Yeah.
And being there because we're fixers.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Right. At the table, probably listening at home, everybody's a fixer. And right. So it's our first reaction to
jump in.
And that's not always the best approach.
That's right.
And
there's a lot of the directions of therapy, in fact, more over recently has been that is commonly a problem with us. Somebody could tell us a menial problem. We try to fix it rather than just listening to their problem. But the position that you held with that would have had an emotional effect on everybody that was there as well, that captain was doing a good job and they're kind of being in that supportive role, but the eye contact over into the corner, if you're just standing there, that guy's got it back.
Yeah, you provided an opportunity.
That can have a lot, just in the morale of everybody that's involved with that.
Well, that's a perfect opportunity to then too, if that company officer is struggling,
right.
Where you can then do some mentoring, not taking it over,
right.
But just providing some direction to get them back on track.
It's almost like, hey, you're in command. I'm here if you need me to take it.
Yep.
And you got
setting them up for success, but you're supportive and doing it. And just think of the leadership lesson. And I obviously didn't sit down and he probably didn't think, wow, what a leadership lesson. But the leadership lesson of, I don't have to do it all. I can be in that supportive role. And the growth that he experienced at that time of,
so he felt
I could
like
do it. And I
he
did
felt
it.
Like a leader.
So, yeah, right.
And it's that empowering.
Empowerment's a good,
that's right.
Yeah, and that was special, and one of the nicest compliments I ever got was his engineer. She told me that when she walked out and saw me at a distance, she said, I knew it was going to get better. Mm. That was like, to this day, it gives me chills because I brought value. I didn't throw it on him, but I'm here if you need me kind of thing. So that's that being present. But I think as we get higher in the leadership world, we need to realize that we need restraint too. Because we are fixers, we are doers, we are jumping.
Absolutely.
And the higher you go, the more you have to strike that balance between, okay, yeah, leader's intent, but can I step away long enough? But when do I need to jump in? And have I given them the tools and the training? And not just the direction, but the tools and the training. And that's a balancing act.
Well, you get used to making decisions, I think.
Yeah.
Hey, I've done it. I've done these different roles. And now it's, you bring me something, I'm going to decide for you and move on. But the restraint piece is huge and something I've had to learn. And I still don't do fantastic with but somebody brings something and what do you, how do I handle this? And having that, that little light bulb that goes on, oh, wait a minute, here's an opportunity. How do you handle it? Why don't you go figure out some ideas or bring me some solutions? And we can talk about it, or you go handle it and I'm comfortable with you doing that and then come back and tell me what you did. And if you make a mistake, I'm not going to fry you. Yeah.
That's
I'm going to be, that, hey,
that's the key.
Did you think about, or maybe you learn, you move on, you don't get pushed out there. And then I'm not going to cut you off the knees.
If you don't make mistakes, you're never going to develop as an individual. So
you don't learn.
Exactly. Yeah.
What's the best way to learn not to do something this way? Well, do it that way.
Really, yeah, suffer the consequence. Happens, right? Yeah.
And it's the same if it's personal or like in the command post.
Yeah.
I mean, when do you want to make the mistakes and the trainings and doing some of those real world things, but, and being supportive from the battalion chiefs of others coming in to help you or hearing something. I mean, the times I remember rolling in and they didn't even get assigned to the call. You just walk up as that command post support. You can see your peer and just go, oh, thank God you're here. hey, let me help you out. Get this. So you got your accountability going or whatever. But yeah, it's all opportunities and they're all sitting out there.
All,
so
they're
just a great conversation. Yeah.
Yeah. They're in front of us countless times. I was thinking about what you were saying about the academies, the task books and all that stuff in officer development at Metro. So proud to hear all that, because when I was a brand new PC, my first day, I was by myself and had no task book, had no academy. had no mentor, had nothing. And it was my first day and I had zero anything from the organization. And it was 4th of July on a red flag day in one of our battalions that has a major I zone. And I had 14 working fires that day, starting at 10 minutes after 8 with a working house fire with 15 people evacuating and the Delta exposure burning on arrival. That was my induction into my new job. And it was just from then on the whole day, that fourth of July, it just was constant. And I was
immersion therapy,
man. Well, and
at least you got to have a fire when you started. I think I waited 3 months before I had
we called him. He couldn't get a fire to save his life. And at the busiest battalion we have.
Battalion. Yep. 100%.
It's all about prevention, right? Yeah, he's doing a great job.
Apparently.
Yeah, your crews are doing a great job.
Yeah.
But doesn't that go back to like the old management training of promoting to your level of incompetence?
Yeah, so Peter Principle.
We've been trying to correct that for years and years. And it's funny that, you know, the old stories that you hear of when I got made and I started and I had no idea what was going on. At least we have identified it. We're finally at a point where we're trained for the position that you're going to rather than just the one that you're in.
And
it's
yeah.
Well, one of the military principles, going back to that, you know, we talk about is know the job of the person above you and teach your job of the person below you, because at any given time, you don't know what role you'll be filling because we're dealing with battle. And battle never goes as planned, but planning is indispensable, right? That's what Eisenhower said. I found that in battle, plans are useless, but planning is indispensable.
Yep.
And one of the reasons I always emphasize to my company officers is the need to potentially be a tactical supervisor, division or group, and train them for that role was not just for that fire. It was for a mindset of being tactical in your mind all the time, being ready to be tactical. And yeah, you know, it's a room of contents. It got in the attic a little bit. Did we really need Division Alpha and Roof and Rick and Medical? Probably not. But what was the benefit of doing it? They learned how to be tactical. They were in a leadership role. They stood in the tactical gap. They bridged the gap. They're in the next. They're thinking tactically. So guess what? When I'm delayed and it's cranking, they have had the sets and reps.
Foundation.
The foundation. And what I found, which was almost even more gratifying, was that I could see their leadership level go up in non-emergency environmental issues, mm-hmm. counseling issues, managing the firehouse, making decisions. I could see them just have more initiative and be leaders because I was entrusting them with some big stuff. So all the other stuff was easy for them to handle. It was powerful. It was powerful.
Well, the skill set is transition. It can transition from the command post to the fire station and how you manage that and the buddy to boss pieces. And, you know, you're on the fire ground. You can't be a buddy on the fire ground.
No.
At times. Right? Don't get me wrong. There's autocratic and all those other ways, but it's sometimes you can't, and it transitions over to that. So that's a huge benefit there.
And not to say that on the fire ground that you can't have, I mean, you want feedback from your crews, mm-hmm. but when a decision has to be made, it has to be made. It has to be enforced at that point.
Yeah. So. And the nice thing about divisions and groups on house fires is you're decentralizing that decision making. Need a second line? That's your decision. You know, want to coordinate with ventilation? Go ahead. You know, too many people upstairs? Fix it. You know,
fix that.
Yeah. And
what had a few times.
Yeah. And the thing is I knew he knew how. I wasn't setting up to fail.
Right.
He didn't trust himself as much as I did in that moment. You know,
sounds like a video we may have seen in your class
just recently. Well, I was thinking over lunch, we talked about 9/11, you know, mm-hmm. when we deployed to 9/11 on 9/11 to New York, I was in San Diego. You were in Sacramento. You were in charge of getting the team out the door. You did a phenomenal job. And to me, that was a team success. Just getting on the C5 Galaxy, let alone taking off and going to New York for 11 days.
Right. You know? But you have to have that team to be able to be successful. That was not something that was going to happen with one individual.
Right.
And that's where you have to have a little bit of leadership and some strong support help, and you all come together and make it work.
And mutual trust, right?
Absolutely.
High trust, right? It's okay to make mistakes. We talked about being able to make mistakes and not getting, beat up over it.
Yeah, not having punitive recourse.
Right. And that builds that high trust state. And if I give you something, I'm not going to take it back from you. Even if I think you're going to make a mistake, unless it's life and death, right?
Right.
And that's all part of that. So, well, we're going to start wrapping up. We have another group coming in. But I think this, we're 45 minutes.
And that flew right by.
Right by, yeah. And we could probably talk another 45. So that was great. Any closing thoughts for the week or going on?
No, I mean, it's just been a lot of fun to be here.
like to thank Chief Halton putting all this together again. And it's just been a great week. It's great to see everybody out here. I think they said there's like 40,000 people.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Just happy COVID's winded down and back together.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Thank you.
Amen.
Chief?
First time here is fantastic. So, met a lot of new friends. So,
yeah. Glad you're here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been fun. I haven't been here in a lot of years, so it's been nice to come back and you know, kind of network with a few people and just get. I always think it's interesting spreading the ideas of what's normal in different departments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, different departments between, you know, the South where we are and the Northeast and the West of, well, this is the way that they operate or they do this task or whatever. And it's so foreign, you know, in different parts of the country. I always think it's interesting kind of pulling those things together and just hearing the way different operations go.
Yeah. Yeah. Which happens a lot. That's outside the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Chief Eureka.
So yeah, first time here. I think this has been a great opportunity. I've had an opportunity to network with a lot of folks, and I would encourage anybody to participate in these type of events. This is what keeps everybody engaged.
Yeah, for sure.
Keeps the fire burning.
Yeah, absolutely. The fire service burning. Yeah. Chief Mitchell.
This is great. And a few words, but I just, so we talk about, you know, the relationships you build and really in a career that spans, you know, a couple of decades or more. That's what really, we talked about that safety net of who you reach out to, coming to stuff like this, or, you know, even more local events, you build those relationships and those networks, and as peers or friends or whatever, it's, you hear about stuff and it's the same problems. I mean, that's why it's what we talk about leadership. We talk about command and control and the presence and organizational challenges. But you have that ability in coming and talking about stuff like this to build those networks and create an environment that can make you more successful. You're not going to be perfect, but yeah, if you haven't been before, it's only my second time here, but what a great experience, a great opportunity. I'm looking forward to trying. I was talking to Joe about this earlier, about how do we figure out how to get more of our folks here just to experience it, or others, you know, there's other places to go.
Bring it back to Sacramento.
No, I remember going through that. I was working at a different department then and going into downtown Sac, and I came every year. It was there at least in the first couple, 3 years, and it left a mark on me. It was great.
Yeah.
Yep. So yeah, thank you for the opportunity, Chief Castros. Right.
Thank you guys.
The invite. Sure. And thanks to everybody out there too. Appreciate your time.
Well, I'm glad we're wrapping up because I have the meat sweats because I ate a beef rib that's the size of my head.
Look like a dinosaur bone.
There's a dinosaur bone. I got the meat sweats because they didn't. I don't want to. Never mind. It was great. So I want to thank my friends, my new friends, my old friends for this awesome time together. It was great. I knew it was going to go by quick and fun and great. FDIC is the best. I have been blessed to be associated with it for 22 years. And like the chief said, we go through a long career and there's ups and downs and ups and downs, and FDIC never disappoints. I came here to find refuge. Sometimes came here to get recharged, to get remotivated, to be picked up when my wounds were bleeding. My friends, you know, from the East Coast would come around and, you know, like the chief said, you know, you talk about a lot of the same problems everywhere. And it's just not as bad when you know other people are going through it, not because you want them to, but because they can relate. And you know you're not alone. You're not nuts.
And some of them have good ideas on how to fix it.
And some of them have good ideas how to fix it.
How often do you hear from your folks that, well, I can't imagine this is going on anywhere else, and yet the grass is turning brown everywhere. You know,
that's the biggest thing I hear from when I go teach around the country, which is a privilege and a joy. The biggest thing I'm told, please tell our people that they're not alone in whatever we're going through.
Yes.
And it's the same stuff everywhere. But the solutions are not always present, not always obvious. Sometimes they're right in front of your face, but you don't see them. Yep. And so somebody from the outside needs to kind of remind you or let you see it. So God bless everybody listening, and God bless the fire service. Thanks, everybody.